ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Yadoscha dharma shilasya Nitaram munisattama Tatram sena vitirnasya Vishnor viryani samshanaha Yadoscha dharma shilasya Nitaram munisattama Tatram sena vatirnasya Vishnur viryani sankshana Yadoscha dharma shilasya Nitaram munisattama Tatram sena vatirnasya Vishnur viryani sankshanah of Yadu or the Yadu dynasty. Cha, also, Dharmashilasya, who were strictly attached to religious principles. Nitaram, highly qualified. Muni Sattama, O best of all Munis, King of the Muni Shukadev Goswami, Tatra, in that dynasty, Angsena, with his plenary expansion Baladev, Avatirnasya, who appeared as an incarnation, Vishnu, of Lord Vishnu, the Virayani, the glorious activities, Shamsa, kindly describe Naha unto us. O best of Munis, you have also described the descendants of Yadu, who were very pious and strictly adherent to religious principles. Now, if you will, kindly describe the wonderful, glorious activities of Lord Vishnu, or Krishna, who appeared in that Yadu dynasty with Baladev, his plenary expansion, purport by his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The Brahma Samhita explains that Krishna is the origin of the Vishnu Tattva. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. Krishna, who is known as Govinda, is the supreme controller. He has an eternal blissful spiritual body. He is the origin of all. He has no other origin, for he is the prime cause of all causes. Yasyaika nishpasita kalamata valambya jivanti loma vilaja jagaranda natha vishnur mahansa ihayasya kalabhashesho govindam adi purusham tamaham bhajami. The Brahmas, the heads of the innumerable universes, live only for the duration of one breath of Mahavishnu. I worship Govinda, the original Lord, of whom Mahavishnu is but a portion of a plenary portion. Govinda, Krishna, is the original personality of Godhead. Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. Even Lord Mahavishnu, who by his breathing creates many millions upon millions of universes, is Lord Krishna's Kala Vishesha, or plenary portion of a plenary portion. Mahavishnu is a plenary expansion of Shankarshan, who is a plenary expansion of Narayan. Narayan is a plenary expansion of the Chaturvyuha, and the Chaturvyuha are plenary expansions of Baladev, the first manifestation of Krishna. Therefore, when Krishna appeared with Baladev, all the Vishnu Tattvas appeared with him. Maharaj Parikshit requested Shukadev Goswami to describe Krishna and his glorious activities. Another meaning may be derived from this verse as follows. Although Shukadev Goswami was the greatest Muni, he could describe Krishna only partially, Amsena, for no one can describe Krishna fully. It is said that Anantadev has thousands of heads, but although he tries to describe Krishna with thousands of tongues, his descriptions are still incomplete. Om Agyan Timidandasya Jnananjana Chalakaya Chakshuru Militam Yena
Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yudha Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tham Sajivam Sarvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhya evacha Patitanam bhavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo namo namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare
Dedicate our Janmashtami festival in gratitude to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, and our beloved previous Acharyas, and in a mood of prayer for His Holiness, Jaipatak Swami Maharaj, His Holiness Gunagrahi Swami Maharaj, and His Grace, Shruti Dharma Prabhu. Today, Janmashtami, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 1. Text number 2. I am just reflecting on Janmashtami in 1965. Srila Prabhupada celebrated on board the Jaladuta, a cargo ship. It was just in the area of Cochin in Kerala. He writes in his diary how he gave a brief talk about Krishna to Captain Pandey and some of the staff on the cargo ship. The
previous Janmashtami, he was in Vrindavan. Srila Prabhupada's mood of worshipping Krishna, of celebrating Krishna's appearance day, is very clearly revealed to us in that he was offering his life to give Krishna to others. Jaladuta was just about to leave the continent of India on that day of Janmashtami. The first time Srila Prabhupada was going to depart from this country. 69 years, he never left India. These days, little babies are flying all over the world from India. But it was his first trip outside of his homeland, Mother India, Bharat, on a cargo ship, knowing he had over a month ahead of him. Of course, we cannot understand the mind of a Paramahamsa pure devotee. But to some extent, he revealed it to us through his words, through the writings in his diary at the time. Krishna appeared in this world, especially to reveal his pastimes, to attract the hearts of the fallen souls. Krishna appeared in the Vaivashvat Manvantara, 28th Divya Yuga, in the month of Bhadra, just at the end of the Dwapar Yuga. After Krishna departed, Kali Yuga was about to begin. Krishna revealed his pastimes in Vrindavan, Mathura, Dwarka, Kurukshetra, especially the pastimes of Sri Braj Bhumi, the Madhurya Leela, are so infinitely sweet. He came to this world just to attract our hearts to our original natural state of loving devotion to him. Love is reciprocal. That is the principle of bhakti. That is the most inclusive and highest of all truths. It is Krishna's love for all living beings that he descends into this world. Everything Krishna does, his creation, maintenance, and destruction of creation, paritranaya sadunam vinashaya chaduskratam dharma samstapanarataya sambhavami yuge yuge, is punishing the miscreants, is protecting the pious, is reestablishing the principles of religion, is creating the laws of karma. We may not be able to understand, but everything Krishna does is his infinite, inconceivable love. In Sri Vrindavan, he expands And this is something that's happening for all eternity. As Sri Radharani, his Ladini Shakti, his pleasure potency. And together, that one supreme truth and these two supreme forms are exchanging prema, ecstatic love. And he expands as Shri Balaramji, his original of all expansions, simply to facilitate ecstatic love. Balaram expands as his abode, Goloka, and so much paraphernalia. And Balaram, who is Krishna himself, in the mood of the facilitator of loving reciprocation, whatever he does is to support and ever increase the love between Krishna and all his devotees. Nityo nityanam chaitanas chaitananam. A very incomplete and vague comparison is given, that from the sun planet come so many sun rays. How many sun rays are there? How many sun rays have there ever been? That is not even a fraction of how Krishna expands himself in the form of limitless jivas, limitless spirit souls. And Krishna is eternally manifested as each spirit soul. And each and every expansion is created only for the purpose of the ananda, the highest pleasure of loving relationships. We exist to appreciate Krishna's love and to reciprocate with our love. That's all. That's the only reality. Everything else is an illusion. But everything we see in relation to that reality is truth. This material world is not an illusion. When we see all the people, all the objects of this creation as Krishna's energy to facilitate either directly or indirectly, whether it's Bahiranga Shakti or Antaranga Shakti, the internal, external energy, the covering potency or the revealing potency. It's all there to facilitate loving relationships. And within this creation, Krishna himself, what does he need? From Goloka Vrindavan, everything is full and complete in supreme happiness. But Krishna creates this material existence, and then he personally comes with his flute, with his Surabhi cows, with Sri Radharani and Lalita and Vishakha, with the most intimate of the gopis. He brings Yashoda and Nanda, his mother and father, and Rohini Devi. He brings so many of his friends, Subal, Sridhama, Sudama. He brings Madhu Mangal.
From Goloka Vrindavan, he brings Govardhan Hill and his beloved Yamuna, the river of the spiritual world. He brings the forest of Vrindavan. Not just a replica. He actually brings the forest of Vrindavan from Goloka. The real forest with his devotees. And he performs the same pastimes as he performs in Goloka. And out of his causeless mercy, you know, through Lord Vishnu expansions, because when Krishna comes, as explained here in this purport, all the incarnations, all the expansions, all the avatars of the Lord are within him. He's not only the source of all avatars, Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam, in all portions and plenary portions, even in Vaikuntha. But they're all forever within him. Krishna's perfect and Krishna's complete. He comes personally into this world just to attract our hearts. How much love is there in that? The spiritual world is where everyone's faithful to him. Material world is where everyone is more or less, except for a few of his associates, practically the whole material creation is filled with people who have rejected him, who are unfaithful to him, who disregard him, who don't really appreciate all that he's giving forever and trying to enjoy separate from Krishna. And as Kali Yuga is coming, more and more people are defiant of Krishna. Why would Krishna come from Goloka for people like this? Who in this world is like that? That is his love. When Krishna tells in Sri Bhagavad Gita, Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tatvata tyaktva deham punar janma naiti mameti sorjana. One who can just understand the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities in this world, you'll never have to take birth in this world again. You will attain my abode. The beginning of understanding Krishna's nature of coming to this world is in the Bhagavad Gita itself. Krishna tells Suhridam Sarvabhutana that he's the best benefactor and well-wishing friend of every living being. Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Hridesher Janatishtati. He never leaves us. He's always in our heart. Personally. Not just as an energy. The Paramatma is the personality of Godhead, personally seated within the heart of every living being. Hearing, watching. And for most of us, especially, waiting. And Krishna is so merciful. Not only does he appear to perform his transcendental pastimes in so many avatars,
And once in a day of Brahma, as Krishna himself, Sri Vrindavan Bihari. But he's forever personally, fully present within the sound vibration of the descriptions of these pastimes. Srila Prabhupada defines this as the meaning of absolute in the context that we're speaking. All these secrets are revealed in Bhagavad Gita. According to our surrender, which is inseparable from our faith, according to that faith, according to how we're seeking shelter, we're seeking Krishna, Krishna will reveal himself in his pastimes. When we read Bhagavad Gita, when we hear Bhagavad Gita, if we're sincerely thirsting for Krishna, we are going to experience the same as what Arjuna did. When we're attentively listening with faith in a mood of surrender, seeking Krishna, seeking to serve Krishna, to please Krishna, then gradually, just by hearing these narrations, we become purified and we understand we're in the pastimes of Vrindavan. Whatever the date, whatever the time, and whatever our geographical location, these are all material considerations. But bhakti, the transcendental realm of the Lord, is beyond all material considerations. Srila Prabhupada wrote that each and every one of our temples is none different than Goloka Vrindavan. That may sound symbolic or difficult to understand, but when devotees are gathered together without envy, as truly well-wishers of each other, trying to help one another to please Krishna and serve Krishna, centered around Radharani and Gopinath, or whichever our deities may be, Krishna's there. When we're eager to hear his pastimes, Krishna's there. And he's especially accessible when in the mood that Lord Chaitanya has given us, Trinarapi Sunichena Tororapi Sihishnana Amanida Manadena Kirtaniyasada. When we gather together in this mood to give pleasure to Krishna by chanting his names. So Krishna descends into this world only by love. Krishna especially loves those in this world who assist him in that mission. What is our gratitude to his divine grace, Hesi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, 69 years old, on the Jaladuta cargo ship, celebrating Janmashtami in a mood, Krishna, my life is to give your love to the whole world. And he was going to countries that knew nothing about Krishna. In the mood of Lord Nityananda Prabhu and Srila Haridas Thakur, he was going to spread the holy name and the message of Krishna, the pastimes of Krishna, to people who were the least deserving. Why? Because that's what Krishna comes to this world to do. In the 10th canto, we begin with Parikshit Maharaj. He has just heard a very small summary of Krishna and Balaram's appearance in the 9th canto, at the end. And he's so eager to hear more. The reciprocation of enthusiasm and eagerness between Parikshit Maharaj and Sukadev Goswami is a great example. Time and again throughout Srimad Bhagavatam, Parikshit Maharaj is expressing how he's not feeling any thirst, he's not feeling any hunger, he's not feeling any tiredness. He's enthusiastic to hear more and more because Sukadev Goswami's his words are like the nectar of the river Ganges, flowing to purify the entire universe. Whoever hears this narration of Krishna's pastime, the speaker, the inquirer, and the whole audience, everyone gets purified. And everyone has the opportunity to awaken their original love for Krishna. And Sukadev Goswami, he's responding in so many places, because of your enthusiasm to hear, I'm becoming empowered to be more enthusiastic to speak. This is the nature of devotees. Sukadev Goswami was not ever proclaiming, I'm a great speaker. We find later in the 10th canto, there was a great speaker who heard from the same person as Sukadev Goswami, Vyasadeva. His name happened to be Romaharshan. You've heard the name? He was a student of Vyasadeva. He learned all the subjects. But he had a problem. He wasn't respectful to others. He was thinking that I know more than so many others. And Balaram was the original guru. He came to teach him a good lesson, which he did. You're supposed to be more humble than a blade of grass if you're going, that's what makes a person great. And you're not humble at all. So here, let me give you a blade of grass. And he gave it to him. And Romaharshan, he was liberated by Balaram's mercy. But here is Sukadev Goswami. He doesn't want fame. He doesn't want prestige. He doesn't even want credit. He's saying, by the mercy of Vyasadeva, this knowledge is coming. And Parikshit Maharaj, because you're so enthusiastic to hear, therefore Krishna's manifesting himself through me for you. That was very much Srila Prabhupada's mood, too. Often he would give so much credit to his disciples. You have done all this. You he would say, you are all the representatives of my Guru Maharaj. So here, Parikshit Maharaj is so enthusiastic to speak. To hear. And Sukadeva Goswami is so enthusiastic to speak. Parikshit Maharaj is really taking shelter with so much faith. In the next verses, he's remembering when he was very small, the size of an embryo in the womb of his mother, Uttara. At that time, Ashwatthama sent this Brahmastra, this supernatural, mystical, nuclear weapon, which was blazing with the light of the sun. It was coming right to this little baby. Now, what can an embryo in the womb do to defend himself? He's completely helpless, can hardly even move. And he's seeing this weapon of total destruction coming right to him. He's witnessing. And he's seeing his mother, Uttara. She's feeling even more helpless than the baby because she loves the baby more than she loves herself. What could she do? She just cries to Krishna, please protect this child. And in reciprocation to the mother's call, Parikshit Maharaj sees Krishna appear to neutralize the Brahmastra, to bring him back to consciousness. Sarvasya cha ham hridi sannivishtam matasmidir jnanam abhavanam cha. And by Krishna's arrangement, only he gave Parikshit Maharaj the power to remember that throughout his life. It's impossible for an embryo in the womb to remember what's going on. Do any of you remember anything? Do you remember a single dish that your mother ate that was somehow or other, you know, channeled to you? Do you remember anything? No. But if Krishna gives you the power to remember, you could remember. Krishna says, I'm the power of remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. We could only forget Krishna due to Maya. How could we forget Krishna? He's all attractive. But Krishna gives us the power to forget him by covering us with Maya, because with our free will, that's what we want. So Parikshit Maharaj is so grateful. Krishna saved my life. He restored my life. Yesterday we were speaking of the Nagapatnis, how they prayed for Kaliya, their very unworthy husband. And Krishna bestowed his mercy on Kaliya and gave him liberation. Uttara is crying out. And in that same mood, somehow or other, by the Brahmastra of material illusion and all the various agents of material illusion in this age of Kali, in this world that we live, the Krishna consciousness within our heart is being destroyed. It's being covered. It's being destroyed. And if we really understand what we're losing, then we're not going to be in a sleepy mood chanting the holy names. We'll understand the urgency. See, that's a symptom of... At any moment, Yamaraj could call us on his cellular phone. And when he calls, that's the end. And just as we've just witnessed here, and even during Srimad Bhagavatam class, that call could come. So when we understand our very vulnerable condition in this world, we see these brahmastras coming at us from within and without. And following in the footsteps of Uttara and the great souls, with all our heart, we take shelter of Krishna. Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
That was Maharaj Parikshit. Not only did he take shelter of Krishna in the womb of his mother, but because he received that shelter, he was taking shelter of Krishna throughout his life. And in his seva, he was giving the shelter of Krishna to others. In giving, we receive. Sukadev Goswami, he's so grateful to Parikshit Maharaj. He begins his explanation of the appearance of Krishna in the Yadu dynasty along with Balaram. And the format of how it's being explained is especially relevant to each and every one of us and to the whole world forever. But the nature of spiritual life is forever means especially today. Sometimes when we think of forever, that means so much distance in the future. Or way, way, way back at the past, you know, Brahma was on that lotus flower and we didn't know what to do. But when we speak of the importance of Krishna consciousness forever, forever means especially at this moment today. Mother Earth, Bhumi. She was feeling pain and suffering because she was overburdened by powerful leaders, kings, militaries that were motivated by arrogance and greed. And so much envy. Things were being terribly exploited. Now, with all the pollution of the world today, and all the greed, and all the envy, and all the violence in so many ways. Violence toward cows and animals, violence toward little embryo babies, violence toward minorities, violence toward nations. In today's world, somebody might have to count how many nuclear bombs are in warehouses, only one push of a button away from exploding. It's thousands and thousands. And practically each and every one of them could kill tens and millions of people, what to speak of other living beings, in a moment. And the pollution in the rivers and the lakes and in the oceans and in the air and in the earth. And because of those pollutions, so many diseases, horrible diseases. And how people treat each other, even within families, for selfish reasons, causing their loved ones so much pain. Mother Earth is very, very much overburdened. And like a mother, she's transcendental, Bhumi Devi, but she feels suffering for us. So Mother Earth approached Lord Brahma. Very revealing how she approached Brahma. She took the form of a cow. Now, there's 8,400,000 species of life. And Bhumi Devi has her own form. She's not just some invisible force. She's a person. She's an expansion of the goddess of fortune. And within this earth, she's directly the mother of every living being on this earth. Krishna is the seed-giving father, and Mother Nature is the mother. She takes the form of a cow. Because a cow is completely innocent and completely dependent on the compassion of others. The cow is a mother herself, just like the earth. The cow's giving milk. The cow's giving dung and urine for the well-being of everyone. As Mother Earth is giving everything we have. And because the cow is so dear to Krishna, Govinda, Gopinath, Gopal, to those who are of elevated consciousness, like Lord Brahma, he has special pity for the cow. And that is why she appeared in the form of a cow. She came before Brahma, and Shukadev Goswami tells she was crying, real tears. She was in such a pitiable condition. And she was begging Brahma to help her. Srila Prabhupada, I heard him describe with tears in his eyes how pitiable the condition of the cows are in the world today. But who listens to them? Who do they have to turn to? We're in the Brahma Sampradaya. Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. So we're in the line of Lord Brahma. We should hear the cries of the cows and feel with pity the plight of the cows. And like Brahma, do something about it. But as Mother Cow in this form, she was actually pleading for all living beings, all humanity, all species of life who are depending on her. Lord Brahma, along with Lord Shiva and all the demigods, they brought Mother Cow Bhumi to the shore of the ocean of milk, where Kshirodakshai Vishnu resides. He resides in an island in the ocean of milk named Svetadvip, a Vaikuntha within this universe. They offered prayers, heartfelt prayers. They offered the Purusha Shukta. Sometimes, you know, we hear pundits chant Purusha Shukta and other prayers. The way they were chanting, they were helplessly crying out to Krishna to save the suffering souls. In Lord Chaitanya's Leela, we find Advaitacharya, who is an incarnation of Sadashiva and also Mahavishnu. And he's crying prayers and mantras, begging Krishna, please come to this world. Not for me, for all the fallen souls who are suffering in forgetfulness of you. That was the mood in which Lord Brahma, and in Lord Chaitanya's Leela, Lord Brahma comes as Haridas Thakur. And that's the mood that he's chanting the holy names.
Krishna, 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 Hare, Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
And it's very interesting. In Shantipuram, in Navadvip, the two best friends were Advaita and Haridas, Brahma and Shiva. And they're constantly crying out this Maha Mantra and other beautiful prayers, begging Krishna to come to the world. They're already Satchit Ananda. They're completely liberated in the ecstasy of love for Krishna. Why are they crying? Why are they doing pujas? Why is Haridas doing 196 rounds every day? Day, living in caves. He's willing to be beaten in marketplaces. He's willing to be blasphemed and criticized and misunderstood. And he never stops praying to the Lord, please come and save these people. And when Advaitacharya was chanting, he was so intensely compassionate that the sound of his voice could actually be heard in Goloka Vrindavan. It's not because he had a super powered sound system. The Lord hears our bhav, he hears our devotion, he hears our compassion. And similarly, if we chant like a little baby crying for mother with great humility, with a wonderful service attitude, then yes, in Goloka Vrindavan, our voice will be heard. Even if we're softly chanting japa, it will be heard. Because Krishna always reciprocates with the sincerity of his devotee. So for a long time, they were chanting prayers that are specially designated to take shelter of the Lord and call the Lord to give shelter to all beings in the world. And it's the demigods crying out. And Mother Bhumi is there crying. And Guru Parampara, Krishna from this pastime reveals an eternal truth. He reveals himself through those who love him. We're in the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. Brahma is the original guru of our Sampradaya within this universe. Krishna spoke to him. And here, the demigods don't hear anything. They're just praying. And Krishna reveals his voice and his message to Brahma. Someone's calling. That sounded like the Purusha Shukta. I think it was. That's devotees. They'll reprogram the Amaraj's phone with Purusha Shukta and the Maha Mantra. So Lord Brahma revealed to everyone Krishna's will. Tad vijnanartham sugurum eva abhigacchet. Vedaishta sarveraham eva vidyo vidantakrit vedabedeva chaham. Krishna reveals the Vedas. Krishna's, by all the Vedas, Krishna's to be known. But this verse that we have cited tells we could only really understand the true essence and purpose of the Vedas through our gurus. Evam parampara prapta. Lord Brahma tells all the devatas that Kshirodakshayi Vishnu just spoke to me. And this is the message he wants me to give you. He already knows the plight of Mother Bhumi Earth. He already knows about all the greed and all the envy and all the fighting over what belongs to him. He already knows about all the militaries and all the leaders who are just trampling upon her and all the persons exploiting her. And he already knows our intention of coming here, and he's already made the plan. Krishna, Lord Vishnu, the original personality of Godhead, along with his first plenary portion, Balaram, are going to appear on the earth planet in the Yadu dynasty. And he wants all of you to manifest your plenary portions and your wives, along with great sages, to take birth in the Yadu dynasty to facilitate his pastimes and to give him satisfaction. So everyone go. The Yadu dynasty. There was a king. His name was Devamida. And he had two sons. A Actually, he had two wives. One was a Vaishya, and one was a Kshatriya. And from his Kshatriya wife, he gave birth to Surasena. And from his Vaishya wife, he gave birth to Parjanya. We will, if we have time, of course, we have nothing to do till midnight. There's a strategic plan that our leadership have for this temple. You see, if you don't want to stay for the lecture, you have to go out into the hot summer heat. So there's special benefits. Well, we will discuss the story of Parjanya a little later, perhaps. But Surasena, he was king of Yadus, and he made his capital in Mathura. Mathura is a holy place that's the eternal abode of Lord Krishna. Long ago in Mathura, it was in a forest called Madhuban, near the bank of the Yamuna River. And there was a demon there who was terrible. And the younger brother of Lord Ramchandra, Satrughna, came and he slayed that demon and established Mathura as the kingdom of God within this earth. So when Surasena established the Yadu dynasty there, Mathura was flourishing. He had a son named Vasudev. Sukadev tells that Vasudev was married to Devaki, the daughter of Devaka. And at the time of their marriage in Mathura, it was very, very special. Such a celebration. The son of the king is getting married. Of so much joy, so much festivities. Vasudev was an ocean of good qualities, and Devaki was just like that. Kind, gentle, full of compassion, the personification of goodness and devotion. And at the culmination of the marriage, after all the ceremonies were performed, then it was the time for Devaki to join Vasudev to his home. Her cousin brother, he was so affectionate to his sister that he wanted to make her happy. So he personally gave Devaki a beautiful chariot and agreed to drive it for Vasudev and her. Quite incredible. Such a powerful prince was going to take the role of the driver for his sister and brother-in-law. His name was Kamsa. As he was about to begin the ride, There was horns blowing. There were drums beating. There were Brahmins chanting mantras. There were singers singing songs, poets reciting poetry. It was a tumultuous festival of joy. And just when he was getting the horses to move, a voice resounded in the sky. Kamsa, you are a fool. The eighth child of your sister is going to be the cause of your death. Nothing else was required to be said. Kamsa, how did he change all of a sudden like this? From a loving brother who will do anything and everything to make his sister happy, to the most cruel, violent demon. Suddenly, when he heard this, he grabbed his sister by the hair with his mighty hands, drew his sword with the intent to sever her head. And he was going to do it. It is said that each of Kamsa's arms had the strength of 10,000 male elephants. And these were the elephants of Dwapar Yuga. I don't know exact statistics or ratios or percentages, but probably 10,000 Kali Yuga elephants have the strength of one Dwapar Yuga elephant. So he was really strong. And that's why he was so powerful. He defeated all the other demons throughout the universe practically. All the other, not just demons, but demon kings. Arista, Keshi. Pralamba. They were really strong. They all had mystical powers. They were yogis. But Kamsa had fought. He went to each kingdom of these different places and fought with them, defeated them, and made them so they were right on the verge of death, and they had two choices: either die or surrender to be his ally and do his will. And they all surrendered. So now he's holding the hair of this gentle, lotus-like lady named Devaki. His eyes are filled with wrath and hatred due to his selfish ego. And the size, the sharpness, and the weight of his sword has never been told. Vasudev, seeing his beloved wife, who he has given his heart to, and the Paramatma in Vasudev's heart, wants to take birth in the world through him and his wife, directly or indirectly. You know, his love for his wife was for the birth of Krishna to deliver all living beings in the universe. So he prays to Kamsa that you have nothing to fear from your sister. She loves you. You love her. It's her wedding day. Why do you want to kill her? No one should kill out of selfish reasons just to protect themselves. Because we're not this body. This is the beginning of true human ethics. From a spiritual perspective, is to understand we are not this body. We are the eternal soul. Just like a plant worm is crawling from one leaf to another leaf. Have you seen how they do that? So in the same way, the eternal soul is moving from one body to another body to another body. And in this journey of the soul, if we're so attached to our temporary fleeting bodies that are inevitably going to grow old, get diseased, and die, maybe today, maybe tomorrow, if we inflict pain on another living being for our own selfish interests, then we are condemned to hellish conditions. She's your sister. She loves you. You're a great king. You're famous throughout the land for your power, for your greatness. Everything will be ruined. Your reputation, your legacy, the destination of your soul, everything will be condemned if you kill your own sister. Kamsa could not hear philosophy. Sometimes people get like this. They get so entrapped, either in fear or some sort of material attachment, they just can't hear logical, authoritative teachings. That was Kamsa. So Vasudeva, he was teaching everyone how to preach according to time, place, and circumstance. He put the philosophy aside because that didn't work. And because of the integrity of his character, he had a strength that he could be believed. Nobody could distrust Vasudeva because he was such an honest man of such high integrity. He promised Kamsa, I will give you each and every child that is born from Devaki. Because you have nothing to fear from her. It's your eighth child. But I'll give you every child. You have my word. Kamsa's heart was pacified. He knew that Vasudeva would never break his word under any condition. And he let them go. Soon after, a child was born. His name was Kirtiman. And Vasudeva came with this infant newborn baby child and brought him to Kamsa. Of course, Devaki accepted that. Her dharma was so amazing that she would not support anything that was against her husband's promise. This was inconceivable. When Kamsa saw that Vasudeva actually is giving me his baby to kill, his heart actually melted a little. And he said, Vasudev, you are so honest, you are so truthful, you are so respectful to me. To this extent, I have no danger from this child. It's only the eighth one. Take him home, be a good father, enjoy life. Those are my words, I'm sorry, but he... But he let him go home with the baby. And little Kirtimon is starting to, you know, get a little older, and the mother and father love him so much. Then Narada Muni appears. Because he knows the Lord's mission. Bhaktivinoda Thakur sung that wonderful song, Narada Muni Bhajai Vinaradika Ramana Name. Now, you know, he sings the glories of Radhika Raman in so many different ways. Everything he's doing is for the purpose of glorifying the Lord and fulfilling the wish of the Lord. Naramudi, he's the guru of Vyasdev, who's Trikalagya. He knows past, present, and future. So Narada Muni wants to accelerate and facilitate the Supreme Personality of Godhead's appearance within this world. And he knows exactly what's happening behind the scenes for everything and everyone. And whatever he does is for everyone's benefit. So Narada Muni tells Kamsa, actually, I was traveling, and I happened to come to a meeting of the demigods and the sages, and they were discussing how Vishnu gave them the order to take birth within the Yadu dynasty. Demigods are your greatest enemies. They're out to destroy you. And now they're all taking birth in the Yadu dynasty. And I also heard that in your previous birth, your name was Kalanemi, and you were the king of demons. Vishnu killed you, and he's coming back to take birth in the Yadu dynasty to kill you. Then Narada Muni, I'm your well-wisher, I've given you this information. Something like that. Kamsa knows that what Narada Muni speaks is truth. Some of the background of Kamsa. Within the Yadu dynasty, there was Ugrasena, a great king. He was one of the kings. Ugrasena had a wife of the name Padma. And one time she went into a beautiful garden. A Gandharva of the name Dramela wanted to exploit her. With his mystic yogic powers, he took a form that looked just like Ugrasena, her husband. And he came to seduce her. But she detected, this is not my husband. This is a rascal trying to exploit me. And she cursed him. She was very angry. She said, I
curse you for this abominable act that you're impersonating my husband. Just for your own selfish, arrogant sense gratification. I curse you to be condemned to hellish forms of suffering. So he responded by forcing himself upon her. And the result is she became pregnant. After some time, a child was born. Ugrasena's wife was so upset. She was a mother. She had motherly love for the child, but at the same time, she was very upset because she knew that this is just a terrible thing. So she cursed her own child. That you will be killed by someone of your own family. You will be killed by someone in the family of Ugrasena. That was Kamsa. So he grew up. He practiced all these various forms of yoga and knowledge and martial arts, and soon became a most powerful person in the world, in the universe. The demigods could not even fight with Kamsa. He was so manipulative, so exploitative. How he subdued so many other demonic asura things and got them to be his obedient servants out of fear, not out of love. And one of the most powerful, greatest of all kings was Jarasandha. So Kamsa made strong bond of an alliance with him by marrying his two daughters. Kamsa was so intelligent, incredibly intelligent. He was a mastermind as far as fulfilling his ambitions. There was nothing that could stop him. And now Narada Muni is giving him this information that the demigods are coming in the Yadu dynasty and Vishnu's coming to kill him. He's already been killed before by him. So he went along with his military and his soldiers. They brought Vasudeva and Devaki into a prison cell, shackled them, took that little child, Kirtiman, and Kamsa, so cruel. He didn't even have someone else do it. He did it himself. It's his nephew. He took the child by the feet, lifted him into the air, and smashed him with those powerful arms I was describing against a rock on the earth. The child was dead. Vasudeva and Devaki were prisoners. The baby is responding. At least somebody's listening to me. I don't know what's in your mind. I just know you're sitting there. At least I know somebody's responsive.
why would Devaki and Vasudev keep having children? You can't hide them. You're in a prison cell. You have shackles of chains binding you. There's guards who are assistants of Kamsa who are constantly watching you right at the door. And even Kamsa's coming to check in every now and then. He would terrorize them. But they had six little children. And every time one was born, Kamsa would repeat the same horrific action. The little baby was crying, so innocent, so sweet, so helpless. He'd rip the little baby out of Devaki's arms and smash him against a rock on the earth. After six children were gone, Vasudev and Devaki, they understood in their hearts, maybe not intellectually, but they understood in their hearts that Krishna, the Supreme Lord, was going to be their eighth child. So even if they have to go through the heartbreak of losing their beloved children, they had such faith in Krishna to fulfill his mission. That is their sacrifice. Nayam deho deha padam na loke. Human life is not meant for sense gratification. Tapodivyam putra kayena sattva. Human life is meant to be a sacrifice for the higher purpose of God's service, of compassion to others. Vasudev and Devaki, their compassion to the whole world, knowing that the Lord is going to appear to deliver everyone, and if this is what we have to suffer to facilitate, let it be. Then Krishna, he approached Yogamaya and gave her the message that my own planetary expansion, Ananta, Baladev, has entered into the womb of Devaki as her seventh child. I want you to transfer Shankarshan. The word Shankarshan has many meanings. One is, it unites two families. I want you to take Ananta Dev from the womb of Devaki and place her in the womb, to place him in the womb of Rohini. And then you, Yogamaya, you take birth as the daughter of Yashoda in Gokul. So Baladev, he entered the womb of Devaki especially to prepare for the arrival of Krishna. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he quotes from the Haribamsa, and it's there in other scriptures. Srila Prabhupada explains the symbolic meaning and the history that's behind these six children. That Marichi represents the mind.
Marichi's wife, Urna, had 6 children. And they were extremely powerful, extremely learned. But sometimes when you're powerful and you're learned and you have a very high birth, prestigious, being born to this, such a great sage as Marichi, they ridiculed Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma knows what's best for everyone. And he's also facilitating Krishna's pastimes. So Lord Brahma cursed the 6 sons of Marichi to take birth on the earth. Birth on the earth. As demons. As the sons of the terrible Asura Kalanemi. So they did. In their next birth, they were promoted to being the sons of Hiranyakashipu. And they went out to do tapasya. And actually, they really did wonderful austerities to Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma was so satisfied with them that he offered them any benediction. And they offered a benediction. They asked for the benediction that they could not be defeated by anybody. Nobody could kill them. Now, usually a father is proud of the son if the son does something great. That's quite great, getting the darshan of Brahma and getting benediction. But Hiranyakashipu was outraged. He was so arrogant, so possessive. Hiranyakashipu, like a storm of wrath, he screamed upon them, "How dare you go to Lord Brahma and ask these benedictions without my permission? Curse you. For a long, long time to live in Patalaloka. And then you will be the 6 sons of Devaki. And your previous father, Kalanemi, will come as Kamsa to kill you." So these 6 sons, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura tells, are the sons of the conditioned mind, Marichi, representing lust, kama, krodha, anger, greed, envy, arrogance, and illusion. These are the 6 demons who are the sons of the mind. But in the world today, we find people they're thinking that these demons are their friends. And they're becoming obedient servants of these demons. And the demons are saying, my name is Lust, and I'm giving you such good advice to serve me, make me happy, and you will be happy. I am greed, make more and more. It doesn't matter how you do it. You will be happy, I promise you. And envy. So, but devotees should understand, as Krishna tells in the Bhagavad Gita, for the mind that's controlled, it's the best of friends. But the mind that is uncontrolled is our worst enemy. In fact, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it tells the mind that is uncontrolled is our only real enemy. Devaki, she represents bhakti. pure devotional service. And Kamsa represents fear of material nature, of all the distractions that material nature is bringing before us. So we see in Vrindavan, when in the eternal lila of the Lord that is manifest in this world of Vrindavan, when Kaliya or Putana or Trinavarta or Kamsa, when the Brijavasis felt fear for Krishna, it intensified their bhakti. And when they'd fear separation from Krishna, it intensified their bhakti. But in this world, when we're not on that pure liberated platform, we under Hari Hari. When we're practicing devotional service, the allurements, the distractions of Maya are always calling upon us. And devotees, when they feel fear, avoy charanaravindaram. When we actually see the power of Maya and understand how insignificant we are compared to that power of Maya, and we take seriously that this is Kamsa coming for me, we take shelter of Krishna, we take shelter of the instructions of our gurus, we take shelter of the association of devotees, we take shelter of the deities, we take shelter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita, we take shelter of the holy name. Devaki, who is the symbol of bhakti, due to her fear of Kamsa, she was taking complete shelter of the Lord, and through that process, the demons of lust, envy, anger, greed, arrogance, and illusion are slain. And then the original guru, Shankarshan, Baladev, comes to prepare our hearts for the arrival of Krishna. So the Harivamsa tells on the seventh month of Rohini's pregnancy, to go back, Vasudev's wife Rohini, to protect her when she was 3 months pregnant, he sent her to Mahavan Gokul to be under the protection of his dearmost friend and brother, Nanda Maharaj. And during her, she was living there, and during her 7th month pregnancy, at midnight, as if a dream, she had a vision that she had a miscarriage. Soon after, she woke up and she could understand that it actually happened. She was feeling great distress. Then Yogamaya spoke to her and said, actually, I am replacing your child with the child of Devaki. and that took place. In the spiritual world of Goloka, Rohini is the eternal mother of Balaram. The Srimad Bhagavatam tells that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, appeared within the mind of Vasudeva. And from the mind of Vasudeva, he entered into the heart of Devaki. Just like the light of the sun illuminates the moon that is shining in the eastern horizon. When Lord Krishna appeared in Devaki's womb, she became so beautiful. Her heart was filled with so much joy. And everybody could sense that. Kamsa, assuming that the seventh child was an ordinary miscarriage, but this eighth child, the one he was waiting for, still, even Kamsa had the dignity to wait till the child was born. He was saying, now his sister's effulgent, the prison cell's full of light, everybody seems to be happy. This is my enemy. This is Vishnu. So he very much increased the guards around that prison cell. And he was keeping very close attention. The demigods, Shiva, Brahma, Indra, Agni, Vayu, Surya, Chandra, and so many. They all came to the prison cell invisibly to offer prayers to the child in the womb of Devaki. And then at the most auspicious time, Srimad Bhagavatam, Sukadev Goswami tells, in the 28th yuga cycle of the Vaivasvata Manvantara, in this month of Bhadra, in the prison cell of Kamsa, at midnight, the Supreme Lord appeared before Vasudeva and Devaki with four arms, the Brahma Jyoti radiating from his transcendental body. He was wearing a magnificent bejeweled golden helmet, Kostuba Mani, beautiful jewels and necklaces. His cloth was yellow like lightning. His eyes were like lotus flowers. He was holding the club, the chakra, a lotus flower, and Kamshal Shankar. As he gazed upon Devaki Vasudev bestowing this darshan, filled with love, filled with gratitude, filled with devotion, they offered their prayers. In Vasudev's prayers, he declares the supreme origin of everything that exists out of His causeless mercy appears to this world for the well-being of everyone. Out of mercy. Devaki, she concluded her prayers with such a feeling of motherly love. You are the Supreme Lord. You are Vishnu. But still, Kamsa's just waiting for you. And he's already killed 6 of my children. And the other one, I don't know what happened to. Please disguise yourself as a little baby so he won't know who you are. Lord Vishnu told Vasudeva and Devaki that you are my eternal servants. And previously you have done great tapasya to have me as your child, and now I have come. Bring me to the house of Nanda Maharaj and put me on the bed beside Yashoda. And there will be a daughter that is born there. Bring her back in my place. The Lord blessed them and disappeared. And assumed the form of a little baby child. So beautiful, so supremely sweet and innocent. Like a little human child. Devaki embraced the little baby of hers. She didn't just love him as her baby. She loved him as God too. How could we ever conceive of the love of Devaki for this little baby? She gave him some milk. Because it was a long trip to Gokul, across rivers and through forests. And to facilitate the Lord's plan, Devaki handed little Krishna to Vasudeva. By the mystic power of Yogamaya, the chains that were shackling them, they opened up. The doors that were locked, unlocked. The guards with all their weapons fell asleep. And there was a whole series of doors in the prison house. They all opened. In fact, everyone in the kingdom except Devaki and Vasudeva and the little baby was asleep. Yoga Nidra. So Vasudeva took the little child and walked out. When he came outside, it's the month of Shravan, the month of Bhadra, so it's the rainy season. So there was torrents of rain. But still, Vasudeva had to fulfill his mission, and how the Lord helps in every way. Ananta Dev appeared. Like Shesha, a many-hooded serpent, and followed just behind Vasudeva as an umbrella. Vasudeva didn't see him. It's pouring rain, and not a drop is getting on Vasudeva the child. Then they come to the Yamuna River. They have to cross it. And because of the severe rainstorm that's happening. Yamuna Devi is flowing so swiftly with whirlpools of waves, it's impossible to cross. But she became, just wherever Vasudev was putting his foot, she became completely peaceful and tranquil. So he could effortlessly cross Yamuna Devi. It is said at one time, he actually dropped the little baby in the Yamuna. The child kind of disappeared in the water. Imagine Vasudev's anxiety. But somehow or other he reached down and there was Krishna. And he brought him across. And when he entered Mahavan, everyone there was sleeping. The maternity place of Yashoda, he found Yashoda Mai was sleeping. And there was a little baby girl, newborn baby girl, Yogamaya, who's laying just next to Yashoda. And in the silence of the night, just after midnight, Vasudev carefully takes his own supreme most object of love in his life and lays the little baby beside Yashoda and takes the girl, brings her back across the Yamuna, back into the prison cell of Kamsa. Such a mission. It wasn't like it was on the internet and he had so many likes. It's totally selfless service. Nobody in the world knew about it. Kamsa didn't know. Yashoda didn't know. Nanda didn't know. Only Devaki and Krishna knew. No fame, no prestige. He risked his life. He went through so much hardship. He performed the greatest sacrifice anybody. He's giving up his own son, who he loves more than everything and anything and anyone. And it's completely a secret. Everyone slept through it. But later on, Sukadev Goswami revealed the secret. And you can tell everybody and anyone. But we should understand the mood of Vasudev. Simply for the pleasure of the Lord. And when he arrived back in the prison cell, suddenly, the shackles locked around him. And Devaki, suddenly, all the doors smashed shut and were locked again. And worse of all, the guards woke up. And beyond Devaki or Vasudev's control, and we see this a lot during Srimad Bhagavatam class, the little baby girl cried so loud. Some of your mothers, you're thinking, don't cry, my baby, you'll disrupt the class, everyone will look at me. And then everyone in the class is just going to be waiting for me to get out. You may think that's bad.
But for Vasudeva and Devaki, she's all they have in their life. And now she's crying so loud and they can't stop her from crying. And she wakes up all the guards. And Kamsa hears the crying. He's notified immediately. He's like a thunderstorm of anger and fear and envy. Immediately in his mind he thinks, the eighth child who has come to kill me has been born. And with weapons in hand, immediately he charges down to the prison cell. He runs inside, and there's Vasudeva and Devaki with this innocent little newborn baby girl. Kamsa's eyes are like red coals of wrath. With a thunderous voice, give me that child. Devaki, who's soft and gentle like a lotus flower, is holding her little baby, crying, pleading with her brother. You've already killed six of my children. Just let me have this one. It's a girl. You have nothing to fear from a girl. Just let me keep this girl. Kamsa would not consider it. He ripped the child by force out of the arms of Devaki. And with his mighty hands grabbed the child's legs, lifted her up with the purpose of dashing her, crushing her on the rock of the floor. But as he lifted her up, the little baby slipped out of his hands and floated into the sky, where she assumed the form of Durga, riding on a lion with eight arms and many weapons. She was out of Kamsa's reach in every possible way. The controller of the entire material energy, Durga, in all of her ornamentation and power and majesty, looked down on Kamsa and proclaimed, the child who was born to kill you is somewhere else. Why do you cause so much pain to your brother and sister? And she disappeared. That was quite a sobering event for Kamsa. He became repentant. This is just totally out of my control. But now I have nothing to fear from Vasudeva and Devaki anymore. Because the child's already born and it's somewhere else. So Kamsa, somehow or other, his human emotion appeared, which is a very rare occurrence. And he actually started thinking back of what he's been doing for all these years to his beloved sister and brother-in-law. And they were always kind. They always respected and honored him. They never even got mad at him. They never said anything bad against him. They were always his well-wisher through all this. And yet he was so cruel
And somehow or other, now he's understanding that. And he bows down to Devaki and Vasudev, and he begs their forgiveness. Vasudev and Devaki are so gracious, so kind, so transcendental. They forgave him. They didn't even blame him. They said, this was all destiny. It's not you. Of course it was him. But this is the mood of a Vaishnav. So Vasudev let them go free. But then Vasudev was due to bad association and remembrance of Narada Muni's instructions. He changed his mind again. And he decided to send demons and his military to kill every single child that was born in the last 10 days. And they went out to do that. And then he put Devaki and Vasudev back into prison, where he kept them for years and years. But meanwhile, would you like to know what happened back in Mahavan? How much time do I have? Well, we break our fast at 12 o'clock, which means midnight. This clock doesn't say anything about AM or PM. So I'll try to end by 12 o'clock according to this clock. Vrajbhumi. Jiva Goswami tells in Gopal Champu, from the perspective of Krishna, as Rasa Bihari, as Srinanda Nandan, as Yashoda Nandan, how the events leading to the birth of Krishna took. Simultaneously complementary to the Srimad Bhagavatam, Jiva Goswami is revealing other details, which he has extracted from holy scriptures. So we have described Devamita had two wives. And from the two wives were Surasena, who became king of Mathura and father of Vasudev, and from the other was Parjanya. Parjanya was a reservoir of every good quality. He was irresistible, attracting people's hearts because he was so compassionate, so kind, so simple-hearted and honest. He loved everyone, and everyone loved him. And his nature was a great leader of the cowherd community. So he was given the tract of land by Surasena in Mahaban Gokul, where he became the king of the gopas and the gopis, the cowherd men and cowherd girls. And he had such immense wealth, the wealth of cows and bulls and calves. And his agricultural fields were prospering, flourishing. And he provided everything for everyone. He was so generous. He never claimed anything to be his own. As a leader, he considered everyone like his own children within his rule. And he literally provided everything. He gave his heart and soul, even to the least among his citizens. Parjanya had 5 sons: Upananda, Abhinanda, Nanda, Sunanda, and Nandana. And these 5 sons were like 5 jewels who represented the highest qualities of dharma, value, character, and devotion. They were all pure, unalloyed devotees of Lord Vishnu Krishna. And they lived for the upliftment of all. There was a gopa named Samukha. Samukha had a daughter. Anyone who even saw this little girl, their lives were never the same. Their lives were filled with auspiciousness. Her name was Yashoda. The daughter of Samukha and the son of Parjanya, Nanda and Yashoda, were married in Gokul Mahavan. There was a special ceremony where Parjanya, seeing that his 5 children were grown up, they could take the responsibilities of leading the Braj community. So he and his good wife decided to go across the river to the Vrindavan forest and spend the rest of their life worshiping Krishna and leave all the responsibilities to the children. Knowing that they were qualified. So he had this ceremony where he was going to put special tilak on Upananda, the eldest son, who was so highly qualified, and he would become Brajaraj, the king of Braja. So the ceremony took place, and Parjanya gave the kingdom to his eldest son. Just about to leave for the forest. And Upananda did something that is incredibly exemplary, historical, and wonderful. How many people want to be? There was no problems in Brajbhumi. Parjanya was such a good king. Everyone was happy. Everyone was singing and dancing. The cows were singing and dancing. There was so much milk and so much ghee because the cows were protected and so well fed that Parjanya just was practically inundating everyone with the wealth that was there. So who wants to leave that situation to go to the forest to do austerities? Parjanya. And what eldest son who's entitled to it and has no rival at all wants to give it away? Upananda. Like father, like son. Such a pure heart. Upananda wasn't thinking, yes, I'm the rightful heir. I'm the eldest son. Everyone looks up to me. I have no rival. Everyone loves me. Everyone will be happy. And they would. And he could do it. But he was thinking, my younger brother, Nanda, is more qualified than me.
Because ultimately, what attracts people is affection. The mind, the senses, they get attracted by so much. But that's not real attraction. Only affection attracts the heart. And there's no one who's more affectionate than my younger brother, Nanda. He loves so unconditionally everyone. And he proclaimed to everyone there that he's more suitable for this service than me. And Nanda was, he was very surprised. He wasn't expecting this. He didn't even say anything. He was just sitting there. And then Upananda, in front of everybody, puts the tilak on Nanda Maharaj, proclaiming he is Brajaraj, he is Brajesh, he is the king of Braj. Everyone, especially the father, Parjanya, was so pleased, and the mother. Everyone in Brajbhumi, their hearts were filled with bliss just to see how there was absolutely no envy in the hearts of these five children. They were only there for each other. And Nanda Maharaj really couldn't refuse, because Upananda just gave him the post, gave him the kingdom, gave him all the property, gave him all the cows, gave him everything. And all the Brijabasis were cheering, Haribo! They were so happy. So Nanda Maharaj was kind of just quietly embarrassed. And he said, Upananda said to him, he said, I'll be your minister, and I'll give you advice whenever you ask, but you are the king. And Nanda Maharaj, not only he said it, but he did it for the rest of his life. He said, I'll take this role because this is what you want me to do. This is what everyone is asking. But I'm your servant. And any advice that Upananda gives me, I will take as my order and my life and soul to execute. And that's the way he led the Brijabasis forevermore. So everyone was so filled with joy living in Mahabhan. Of course, this is all happening before the marriage of Vasudeva and Devaki and all that stuff. So they were living together. And Nanda Maharaj and Yashodha, they could see that there was only one anxiety in all of Vrindavan, in all of Braj. That Nanda and Yashoda had no children. After the coronation ceremony, to go back little, Parjanya, just before he went to the forest, just to give his life and surrender everything with no possessions to Krishna, he taught lessons to Nanda Maharaj and his five children. Nanda Maharaj was the middle child, just as Arjuna was the middle child of Maharaj Pandu. Parjanya asked, what is fear? And Nanda Maharaj
Actually, Parjanya was asked these questions by his children. What is fear? And he replied, fear is due to karma. What is shelter? Where do we find the greatest shelter? The reply was, bhakti to the Supreme Lord is the only true shelter. What is the most cherished of all objects? His reply, devotees of the Lord are the most cherished of all objects. What is true happiness? Replied, Krishna Prem is the truest happiness. These five questions and five answers are pretty simple, but it's with these that he entrusted the kingdom to Nanda Maharaj. And then he left to give his life and soul to the Supreme Lord in the forest. Brajbhumi flourished more and more and more under Nanda Maharaj's compassionate, loving rule. But love by nature is selfless. So even though the Brijabasis had everything themselves, they were also sad in heart because Nanda and Yashoda had no child. So Upananda, Abhinanda, Sunanda, Nandana, who were leaders of the cowherd men, they came together and had meetings. What are we going to do? Why they're not having children? And decided to get the best of the Brahmins to perform sacrifices. And the sacrifices were going on. But still, nothing was happening. So Nanda Maharaj told Yashoda Mai that the child that we're dreaming of having is beyond karma. And all these sacrifices are karma kanda, so they're not going to work. Somehow, Nanda Maharaj told Yashoda Mai that I'm having this dream. I'm seeing on your lap this very beautiful little child who has the complexion like a blue lotus flower and who has eyes like lotus flowers. He's the personification of the essence of all beauty and all sweetness. And Yashoda Mai, she tells that I'm seeing in my dreams, I'm seeing that same child on my lap. They fell in love with this little child. They understood in their heart of hearts that this child is the supreme object of their heart's love. But he was just appearing to them in visions. So Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda decided to do a Dwadasi fast with pure devotion for 1 year. And they did so. Simultaneously, Lord Narayan appeared to both Nanda and Yashoda and told them, why are you lamenting? That child that's appearing in your vision is going to be your child. Previously, you were Drona and Dara. That Drona and Dara are actually your playing. They're actually expansions of you. They did severe austerities for tens and thousands of years to receive me as the child. And Drona and Dara are going, they're merged in you. You are the original mother and father. And your cherished vision will soon be fulfilled. Meanwhile, actually, in the month of Magh, Nanda Maharaj had a vision. That beautiful, beautiful child that they had been dreaming about and seeing in their hearts for years appeared within his heart. And he saw there was a beautiful female that was covering his limbs and brought him from Nanda Maharaja's heart to Yashoda Mai's heart. And the child entered Yashoda's heart, and the girl entered into Yashoda's womb. Yashoda had the same vision. And just after that, Yashoda Mai was pregnant. And when the symptoms of her pregnancy were revealed, all of the residents of Vrindavan, the Brijavasis, they were anticipating with so much loving eagerness and celebrating good fortune and doing so many auspicious activities for blessings upon the child of Nanda and Yashoda. After 14 months within the womb of Rohini Devi's pregnancy, Balaram was born. In the residence of Nanda Maharaj in Gokul. And just after that, at midnight, Krishna, who was in the womb of, who was in the heart of Yashoda Mai, according to Gopal Champu, this is the mystery that is being revealed. When Lord Vishnu appeared in the cell of Kamsa and gave his darshan to Vasudeva and Devaki, Devaki prayed, please be just like an ordinary little baby child. At that moment, Yashoda Mai, she gave birth. The little child, Krishna, was brought secretly by Yoga Maya to Mathura. And the Vishnu form in the prison house, he disappeared by merging into the little baby form that was brought from Mahaban, the child of Yashoda. And it was the child of Yashoda that Vasudev brought back to Yashoda Mai. Now Yashoda Mai, by Yoga Maya's own potency, was born to Yashoda. And Yashoda, she kind of slept through the whole thing. So she
she fell asleep when the child was born. One of the children went to Mathura by some mystical traveling, and the little girl just was born and was laying next to her on bed. And she didn't know. She was sleeping. And the little child that she gave birth to, the boy, Vasudev brings him back across the Yamuna and puts on the bed and lifts the little girl, Yogamaya, and brings back to Mathura. When Yashodamai woke up, she kind of didn't know what was happening. But she saw next to her on the was Krishna. When she saw Krishna, her eternal son, you've heard this story, love at first sight. This is the supreme example, the supreme manifestation. Yashodamai is for the first time seeing her eternal little child. She doesn't know he's the eternal child. All she knows is, I'm his mother. She lifted Krishna. She embraced little Krishna. She looked at Krishna's beautiful moon-like face, his beautiful little lotus-like eyes, his bimba fruit red lips. Wonderful nose, which is soft like a sesame flower. His complexion, which was dark like a monsoon rain cloud. And every limb of his body was so soft, so tender, so sweet, like little leaves of the tamal tree. She wept in ecstasy of Vatsalya Ras. The other gopis, headed by Rohini, they all came to gather around Yashoda to be with her little child. Everyone fell in love. As Sukadev Goswami tells later, from that moment, every Brijabasi loved Krishna more than their own lives, more than their own bodies, more than their own children. Their love for Krishna was full, inclusive, perfect, and complete. Krishna's all attractive. Rohini Devi, the mother of Balaram, she called for a very elderly Brahmin lady and told this Brahmin lady that bring the good news to Nanda Maharaj. It was now early in the morning. And Nanda Maharaj and his brothers and the other cowherd men were just about to milk the cows. In fact, they were in the process of doing so. And this lady, she had all these auspicious gifts to present to Nanda Maharaj with the good news. She was so happy. When she approached the Goshala, she was beaming with bliss, effulgent with joy. And Nanda, Upananda, Abhinanda, Nasunanda, Nandan, and everyone looked at her and understood is it. And she could hardly talk, she was so blissful. And finally, somehow or other, she gave the message.
Brajaraj, the king of Braja, has a son.
That's all she could say. And there was nothing else to be said.
Nanda Maharaj, he was in such ecstasy, he became stunned. He couldn't even move, he couldn't even talk. All he could do was be in ecstasy. As was everyone.
And the nature of great personalities is when they get good fortune, they want to share it with everyone. So what was Nanda Maharaj and his brothers, what was their immediate response to this? Just to give gifts to everybody. They weren't thinking about themselves. You know, all the milk that we have now, goes to the Brahmins. All these cows we'll give to the Brahmins. Whatever gold, whatever wealth we have, we'll give to everybody. They were just in their minds just giving gifts. And they were actually giving them too. That's important detail. Vasudev was giving like that, but he didn't have anything to give, so his giving in the mind had the full potency and credit of giving it. He was giving millions of cows to Brahmins and giving so much food to everyone and everything, and he got the full credit for doing it because he didn't have anything except his thoughts. But if you have something more than your thoughts, you actually have to activate your thoughts. So Nanda Maharaj, they were just giving everything. And Nanda Maharaj, knowing, you know, he was thinking, what is most auspicious for the child? He went to take his bath to become clean and put on his very, very best clothes. And was moving with so many other Brijabasis who were playing instruments and celebrating. They were going to the place where Krishna was born. Gokul. Now when he approached the inner sanctum of Yashoda's room, Nanda Maharaj, with such ecstatic, loving anticipation, patient waited. Rohini, she told Yashoda Mai, who was in her bed holding Krishna, that Nanda has come. There was a little curtain. Rohini closed the curtain so nobody could see Yashoda, not even Nanda Maharaj. Bhakti is very dramatic. Now all the separating him from his son that he's been dreaming about and praying and doing yajnas for and doing fasting for and giving his whole heart of loving devotion for, it's just a curtain between. And Rohini picks up little baby Gopal and brings him before Nanda Maharaj, places little baby Krishna in Nanda Maharaj's arms. Nanda Maharaj gazes upon Gopal. Little Gopal gazes upon Nanda. Nanda Maharaj, stunned in ecstasy, feeling the body of Krishna, seeing the beauty of Krishna, feeling the love of Krishna. Tears of ecstasy, symptoms of ecstasy are permeating his whole life at this moment.
And Rohini Devi goes behind the curtain again and tells Yashodamai that your child is now in the arms of his father. And that was the culmination of Yashoda's ecstasy. She wept in love. Thank you. Thank you very much. I never said the lecture was over. I just... All I did is thank you very much. So Nanda Maharaj wanted to share his joy with... with everyone, and he and his brothers and all of the leading gopas and gopis, they organized Nandotsava, the festival of Nanda Maharaj. Just see how bhakti is. This is the secret of the innermost joy of the soul, the atma, is bhakti. Bhakti is about giving. Bhakti is about sharing. Bhakti is about loving. Nanda Maharaj has his little child, Krishna. And he's feeling such joy. His heart is flooding with emotion. And his first thought, really, is, let me share Krishna with everyone in Vrindavan. With everyone. And they called for this beautiful festival to bring auspiciousness to his little baby and to bring joy and love to all the Brijavasis. The Brahmins came to chant auspicious mantras, perform pujas. The poets were composing the most eloquent songs. Musical instruments were playing. They performed the Abhishekam, the bathing of Krishna. And interesting, the Abhishekam, Panchagavya, Panchamrita. They want to offer the purest, the most precious, valuable things to Krishna. And what is that? The gifts of Mother Cow. Panchamrita is milk, dahi, yogurt, ghee, sugar, Honey, and Panchagavya, cow dung. They're bathing little newborn baby Krishna with cow dung and cow urine and ghee and milk and yogurt. All the gifts of Mother Cow. And they're rubbing Krishna's body with a little brush made out of the tail of a cow. And as gifts, they're giving cows and calves and bulls to everyone, and all the cows and calves and bulls are decorated so beautifully
with ornaments and silks. And they became so overwhelmed with ecstasy, they wanted to show their love for each other by very, very graciously, enthusiastically, they were showing their love by sprinkling each other with butter. And dahi and ghee, because they were a cowherd community. Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmana Hitaya Chajagadataya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Namo. Srila Prabhupada was born on Dandotsava. At the very time when Nanda Maharaj is performing his wonderful festival of love, along with Yashodamai and everyone, just giving pleasure to Krishna and giving pleasure to all the residents of Vrindavan. And I remember Prabhupada, he wanted to establish New Vrindavan. And he actually wanted to establish farm communities all over the world. But that was the first one. Somehow it came to him by very extraordinary ways. And Srila Prabhupada said, you should teach the world cow protection, how to love and honor mother cow. Because that's Krishna's eternal pastime in Vrindavan. The bull represents dharma, religion, true spiritual principles, and the cow represents the nourishing mother for humanity. Nanda Maharaj is Gopendra. He's the king of cowherd men. And Yashodamai is Gopeshwari. She's the queen. She's the queen of the gopis, the cowherd girls. And Krishna's Gopal, protector of cows. Govardhan, the nourisher of cows. Govinda, the giver of pleasure to the cows. Gopinath, the lord of the ladies who take care of cows. Gopananda, the giver of ecstasy to the cows. And Nandotsava was celebrated. Everything was centered around showing respect and love for the cows. And Srila Prabhupada, he asked these people to establish cow protection and agriculture. And he also said, he said, make a replica of Vrindavan with the seven major temples and Yamuna and Govardhan, Keshigat. He actually used those words. It's in letters too. But it's centered very much around the cows. And nobody knew anything about cows in those days, the people who were there. But Prabhupada wanted cows. They didn't have any money. So they got one cow. She was, by material standards, you know, they didn't know how to buy cows, and they didn't have any money to buy cows. But somehow they got this cow. She was a little cow, and she only had one eye because she was blind in the other. Was black in color, very small comparatively, and Prabhupada came and he saw the cow, and he named her Kalia.
And he loved that Kalia.
Yeah, they were up on this isolated mountain that you have to slush through mud for 3 miles to get to, and it was this old, dilapidated, you know, little barn. It was very austere, and Prabhupada stayed there for a month. And every day he would drink the milk of Kalia. And he said, "This is the best milk I have tasted in 40 years. And he taught them, there was only a few people up there. He taught them how to make kheer with Kalia's milk. So many preparations. And that was it. ISKCON had one cow. That was 1969. 68 or 69. And then in 1976, about 7 years later, for the first time, Prabhupada came back on that hill. And Kalia, by that time, she was among so many cows. There was probably, I don't know, at least 50, 60 cows at that time. And Kalia was kind of the smallest. She was the only one who didn't have an eye. But every year she gave a calf. And she would give milk till she gave another calf, practically. She was just very simple, very steady, very sweet. She was like a queen. She had such dignity, such humility. She was so gracious. Amazing. And because she was kind of old and she wasn't as big and didn't, you know, give as much as the others who were at the main farm, she was kept up there, you know, on that hill. And when Prabhupada came up, Kalia came running and was walking beside Prabhupada on a morning walk. And somebody wanted to remind Prabhupada, because, you know, Prabhupada by this time had been all over the world about 10, 12 times, and so many cows and so many communities of ISKCON and everything like that. And somebody was going to tell Prabhupada. He said, "Prabhupada, you know this cow?" Srila Prabhupada smiled and said, "This is my old friend Kalia." He never forgot her. So Prabhupada entrusted us with a responsibility. He considered this was one of the major factors of his whole mission. Because when Prabhupada would think about all the cows being slaughtered all over the world, even India, his voice would get choked up. Tears would form in his eyes. In one place in his books, his purport, he says he cannot even write the plight of the cows and the calves, how they have to suffer in this world. We said yesterday, Prabhupada said, the barometer of the spiritual standards of any society is how happy cows are. Cow means bull too. Cow protection does not mean just not killing. When a parent protects the child, it doesn't mean that they don't kill them. Protection means giving them everything possible to make them happy. So any cow that comes to our little community, Radha Gopinath Temple's village community is
Govardhan Eco Village.
It's not my place. It's not Sanakumar Prabhu's place. It's not Gauranga Prabhu's place. It's our place. That means each and every one of us. You know, we're all devotees of Radha Gopinath, and this is Radha Gopinath's farm community. They're Radha Gopinath's cows. It's our great responsibility and our great opportunity and our great fortune that we have the chance to make Radharani's cows and Krishna's cows happy. And today is Janmashtami. That means Krishna's birthday. So I'm asking everyone, if possible, let's give Krishna a birthday present by helping to make the cows happy. Because they're dependent on our compassion. And I'm not just speaking as a fundraiser. Because I don't know how to do that. And you all know that. And if you don't already know that, you'll definitely know that after this talk. Because that's not the point. The point is that all of us could actually be part of this wonderful mission of Gopinath and Sri Radharani by really feeling a personal connection with cows through our seva. And our cows really do need help. And Krishna's not just going to arrange that somebody's going to come, that the demigods are going to drop crores of rupees on the goshala. I was kind of hoping they would do that, but but I realized that that's not what Krishna wants. He wants all of us to feel the happiness of together, just giving so much protection and so much security and so much nice food and so much nice medicine and so much nice loving care to our cows. Now, Krishna Chandra Prabhu is going to make a presentation of how we could all participate. And I'm humbly requesting, please, let us open our hearts to help Govardhan Eco Village cows. And now, lecture is ended. Thank you. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Shri Radharani, Shri Gopinath ki, Gaura Premanandi.